Gaming on the Frontier. This is Bruce.
And this is Trav.
Welcome to Gaming on the Frontier, your podcast of not always having to do the slog through the jungle or the mountains or the desert or the dungeon. Sometimes you get to take it easy.
Well, I guess I can repolish my sword again for the fifth time.
Is that what you're polishing?
Well, I was going to add, and this time maybe I'll even go to the armory.
Welcome to Gaming on the Frontier. This week we are talking about downtime. We're talking about what does your characters do when you're not on the main quest? This is not side questing. We already had another episode on that, and please go to Gaming on the Frontier and search in our little search window for side quests. This is actually about what you do, whenever you are in what literally should be considered downtime.
Like in between missions and stuff.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Versus the things you do that are actually part of the mission, but they're distractions, like almost everything that happens in Fallout 4, if you've played the video game. You're supposed to find out what happened to your son, and the first thing you do is they give you this guy who says, "Oh, there's a settlement that needs your help. Would you go do this?" And you're like, "Sure." And meanwhile, your son,
yeah.
What happened to your son? Your little baby that you're trying to find, yeah. So, anyways, it's true of a lot. The main reason to do that is grind. Okay, so
yeah.
But this may not give you any benefit whatsoever along the lines of grinding, but it may do some other things. Now, this is Trav's roommate's idea of a topic, and we thank him for that.
Yeah, it was just after we did the last episode. Roommate, who he kind of stopped role-playing around second edition D&D. So he hasn't gamed in a long time, but we're sitting there talking about topics. He said, "What about downtime? What do you do in between such?" I'm like, "Oh my God, thank you." So yeah, I have to give my roommate Wolf the credit for this topic. And I thank him personally, but he's out like a light right now. So yeah, it's just with downtime, you're not always out in the wilderness. You're not always out hunting monsters in the concrete jungle. You're not always out, working a case for your local police department.
Yeah, you're not flying your spaceship from one solar system to another.
Yeah.
Though that arguably could be downtime.
yeah. But it's, there are still other things that characters in RPG need to do. It's just the stuff that we would call off camera.
Well, no, I disagree. I don't think that's what we're talking about, because that's like where you hand wave and says, okay, we're going to pick up, 2 months from now. Okay, this is where you actually have a plan. Your character makes up a plan for what they're going to spend their time doing, or they're forced to do certain things. You might hand wave some of that away, but it's an opportunity for them to do things by choice during that downtime.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Because there's a lot of stuff that in regular missions, you're on the quest line and you have to go 40 miles, 50 miles to the next town. Well, unless you roll, the GM rolls random encounter, is like, no, you're fine. And so you just get to the place and you just, hand wave the time away and you knock off the ration numbers or whatever and go to the next town, get stocked up again, and then, hit the main piece of the next part of your quest. Now, what we're talking about here is, you know, is this is something that characters really should plan for, because people always have downtime, even though they may not realize they will. And if you don't plan for it, then literally you're wasting it, right? You know, it's yeah, you know, yeah. He who does not trains for failure. You know,
okay,
that,
all right.
That reflexive right. type thing that's so nauseating when people do it to you. But anyways, okay. So, of course, the number one thing, not number one, I'm saying one of the things that sometimes happens during downtime is healing. And that's something that people don't think about a whole lot, because, you know, they, especially in modern D&D, because it's like healing happens. You go to sleep, you wake up the next day, you're perfectly fine. You, no matter what happened to you the previous night, you're good, right? So, but in a lot of games, especially D&D when it first started, that wasn't the case. Even if you got magical healing and healed yourself all the way up to your full maximum, if you went below zero hit points, you were supposed to be disabled for an extended period of time, which could be a few days or even weeks. And if you didn't have magical healing, then you were able to heal a hit point a day, 2 hit points a day, if you were full bed rest. Okay. And so, you know, and other games that don't have magical healing, that's a real thing. You may, you know, it will limit your choices, but I mean, you should plan for that, because, if you don't, again, you can't take advantage of that downtime. Now, obviously, if you're, you know, if you're reconnecting a limb to your body, you're probably not going to be going anywhere. Okay, but that still doesn't mean that you can't read. You can't study. You can't listen to music. You can't plan. If you're in a more modern type thing, you can, you know, now, of course, we've learned all about, you know, computer meetings and VR and all these things. So there can still be a lot of things you can do while you're literally immobile. So, you know, if you're unconscious for weeks, well, then, yeah, you're not doing anything. But assuming that you are, in fact, conscious, then healing, you know, so, and it's, and if you try to shorten it, if in a lot of games, if you don't take the time, then you take disabilities as a result. You end up losing agility. You end up losing intelligence in the case of head injuries. You end up with terrible scarring that, you know, may or may not, woo the opposite gender. Okay. So, you know, I'm just saying it's healing, you know, you have to do. And even if you're not healing, okay, you can still be resting. And if you've been playing a Call of Cthulhu game, you may be resting in a sanitarium.
Yeah.
But even without that, I had one Christmas where I went to visit my relatives and my wife's sister. And she's like, what are you planning on doing while we're up on the farm, Bruce, for a week? And I said, sleeping, because I just spent the previous 3 months getting up every night to run computer programs at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I mean, I had fragmented sleep for like 3 months. And I said, I'm just going to sleep until I'm not tired anymore.
That's the thing. I'm on vacation. Yeah.
And that's exactly what I did. I mean, I basically slept. I woke up the next morning at some point. I went upstairs, got some food, came back downstairs, watched a couple of movies in the movie bank. You know, at some point, they said, hey, Bruce, we're going to go someplace. Would you like to come along? And sometimes I said yes, and sometimes I said no. But, you know, And then it was Christmas, and of course we all got up together and opened presents, and then had the big turkey, and all the rest of that stuff. But I'm just saying, but up till then, you know, I just needed, mental health. I need some mental health rest, and I got it.
What we call today, folks, self-care.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So that's something, you know, that, and you should, and like I said, depending upon the game, in the original Tritac systems, they had mental stability. And if you would lose that, you get a score, and bad things, especially in Bureau 13, when bad things happened to you, or you saw things that man was not meant to see, or, you know, because they had, like, you know, seeing your friend get it, you know, 2 points. Seeing your friend get it real good, 5 points. So that was actually in the list. You know, every losing 1 point makes you want to toss your cookies. So you can imagine that if you went through a bunch of missions and you never really had time to rest, to have downtime, and now you're at a negative, you're down 20 mental stability points. Well, you should be starting to get really squirrely about, you know, things. You know, maybe, you know, you might finding your job satisfaction is really lacking, and you're not the first to go through the door anymore. People are starting to say, "Hey, are you okay? Because you don't seem to be this your normal self." And I'm like, "No, I'm down 20 mental stability points." So yeah, rest can get you back where you need to be.
Yeah, and Pathfinder, they have now in, I believe it is, and looking at my stack of books here on the table, Horror Adventures. They use the sanity rules and just resting after, you know, losing sanity points enough to where that it's not even enough to gain any type of madness. It's just, let's say you combine your three mental stats. Let's say it's a 50-point total, and you've lost 3 points. You can rest and try to gain a sanity point or two back just because, you know, to recover from, yeah, I saw this werewolf transform and just with all the bones breaking and that's just wrong. And I need a small vacation, you know, nice cup of tea and warm blanket, you know. So, yeah, just resting just to regain your center, your mental and spiritual center. And in role-playing, you're doing stuff that normal people don't do anyways. You are not the soccer mom or, you know, 9-to-5, or what was the term Bobby the Brain Heenan used back in the day? The ham and egger 9-to-5 garden variety humanoid. You are exceptional because you are an adventurer, and you just go through stresses that normal people don't. So yeah, your characters do need that downtime, not only to heal physically, but mentally and possibly spiritually, depending on the nature of the game. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like characters that are like, you know, Delta Force, no matter what happens, I'm good. You know, I think characters should be shocked at things that fall outside their wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I complained about that to my group just recently. I said, you've seen a lot of stuff in the last, you know, the last year of your characters' lives, a lot of stuff. And, you know, the Savage Worlds doesn't really have that kind of, you know, negative scoring. You have to make a guts check. Now it's just a spirit check.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, if you make it, you're fine. If you fail, then you're like shaken for a while, but it's never more than a day. It doesn't like go on going. So I'm just saying is that I like people to, you know, give a sense that their character has been through a lot and is engaging in self-care to make themselves better. So that, you know, I mean, I put him through a lot of stuff, and he says, and now the king is giving you a party, and no one's going, oh, thank God. You know, I really need this, you know, a time to get hosed and have everybody tell me what a great person I am, because I've really been through a lot and I'm feeling really stressed out, you know, and nobody says that.
Yeah, it's that whole thing. I feel a little vulnerable right now. You know, it's that one line from Armageddon with Michael Clark Duncan when he's going through the, I don't know, I'm a little emotional right now. Can I get a hug right now?
Yeah.
This very large man ready to break down there at the psychiatrist.
Bring it on in, everybody. Yeah. No, I wish there was more of that. But, I mean, we have so many players who keep treating their PCs like they're robots. And I think that's a real shame because, you know, it's a role-playing game, folks.
Well, that's why they can say, well, this is just a character. I can do that. Your characters still are, if not human, then mortal. Bodies have their limit. Minds have their limit. Psyches have their limit. And
yeah. You come through something and all your equipment's in ruins, but you're fine? Sure you are.
Deep okay, mental scars, people. Yeah.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, again, to get that self-care. So you need to plan for that sort of thing. You know, I think that everybody should, you know, plan on having a party, maybe engaging in some, social releases of one kind or another, you know. And again, if you don't plan for it, you probably won't do it.
Or what did they say? If you don't give yourself a rest, your body will do it for you. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not going to be interesting. See, you can make it fun. You can make it something that's very much your character, you know, rather than it just being the GM saying, well, you know, the king is offering you a party, you know, so.
That does lead into other topics that we can get into immediately. But yeah, you were saying just.
No, I'm just saying is that's the GM basically throwing stuff at you, trying to remind you that you need to do this when you really need to be driving this. Your character needs to be driving it. So because again, even when you have downtime, it's probably going to be limited. So if you're one of those people that just wants to get out the week planner and mark out every hour about what you're going to do. If you don't do it, you're not going to do it. So it's all of a sudden you turn around and it's a week later and the GM is everyone's done their thing and everyone wants to get on with the mission and you miss the opportunity. So, and sometimes it can hurt you in the mission because sometimes what you could do in those downtime is you can do things to prepare for the next mission, like develop a new interest. You know, you went through stuff in your last mission, or maybe you've been meaning to do this, but you forgot the last time, and now for sure you need to go and follow up on that interest, whatever it was. You know, do you need to, you know, learn how to blacksmith? Do you want to learn how to fix a car? Would you like to learn how to cook? Because there's a lot of characters out there that have no idea that food doesn't just come in a wrapper that you pull a tab on and it heats up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, a GM, you know, cooking and eating together is one of those things where you can, you know, get your mental health back.
It is one of the most social activities we as human beings have is dinner time. That's why we have, you know, just the big communal dinners on, you know, let's say, you know, Sunday dinner where the family gets together. It's a communal time where there are some of us who have families that just drive us nuts, but we even do it on holidays. It's still that reconnection to the source, as it were. Even if it's just you and your friends out in the wilderness around a campfire, eating rations and maybe whatever your ranger or your naturalist killed that day or scrounged, it's still comforting to just be around people you know in a relaxed situation over food and drink. And it is. It's a base human need.
And as J.P. Withers said, it's your family's chance to make sure you haven't been replaced by a doppelganger.
That too, yeah. Okay, after we're done eating it, everybody, cut to make sure the blood's red. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, they ask all those questions that you're supposed to know the answer to, right? They tell the stories. And if you're like, fascinating, I never heard that before, and it's like the same story they tell every single year for the past 20 years of your life, you should be, they're like, what? So, yeah.
Remembering Captain Marvel now, all the little things that Carol and Nick were telling each other, and Nick Fury, yeah, I can't eat any sandwich if it's cut diagonal. If somebody cuts my sandwich diagonal, I don't know what to do. I just can't eat it. Yeah. I'm like, this is something we know about the master spy, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Food, food can't touch food. Yeah. You know these kids. Sometimes they never grow out of it.
Oh, no. My kid's late paternal grandfather just mash it all up there. Why? It's all going to go to the same place anyways. I'm like, yeah, good point.
Oh,
yeah.
No, that's a terrible thought. Terrible thought. Yeah. I'm going to drink milk. Doesn't mean I want you to pour it over my sandwich.
The second wife and her father would eat German chocolate cake that way. They'd each have a slice in a bowl and just pour milk over it and eat it. And I'm just looking at them. I go, is this Ohio or Oklahoma? Because this ain't natural. Just what the hell are you two doing? Yeah.
That's how I used to, when I was growing up, that's how I ate rice. You know, I didn't like rice dry, so I used to pour milk and sugar in it, and it was just, you know, it was very sweet and tasty that way.
Cooked rice or non-cooked rice?
Well, obviously you can't do that with non-cooked rice.
Well, I don't know. Okay, so you'd cook the rice, have it in a bowl, and then milk and sugar over it.
Yes. Basically, I turned it into cereal.
Yeah, it's kind of like uncrisped Rice Krispies. Okay, now I get it. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, really, it is. So, but I'm just saying is that now I would never think to do that. I would just, you know, if it was too dry, I'd add a little butter to it, okay?
Yeah.
Or maybe some gravy or something, you know. Or
so you changed over the years from sweet to maybe savory or salty. Okay, all right.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, indeed. So, and you know, that's something that, like I say, that's part of the doppelganger check. But anyway,
yeah.
You know, but that's also one of the things you can do with your time off. You can travel. You can engage in what we call personal travel.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, you reconnect with family, but that can also be, it can be a reunion. It can also be where you're celebrating somebody's anniversary, which allows you to develop the backstory of your character.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be an honorarium where you're being celebrated or somebody else is being celebrated for something. Graduations, great deeds they might have done, or...
I was just going to say like a promotion or something. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, it could also be, you could be voted a part of the town, a town father or mother, and then of course there's the memorials.
Yeah.
Because sooner or later, everybody dies unless you're an elf.
Well,
or even, sometimes a vampire. Speaking of two things that are mostly immortal. Yeah. So there's lots of reasons that families get together. It's not just, you know, it's not just for like feast days. And sometimes it is, you know, because like it's the big, you know, every year, you know, Passover, and at the end of which everybody gets together with their family, and at the end of it, they all look at each other and they say, next year, you know, in Jerusalem. And sometimes they do it. So you could be traveling all the way to another country because that's the Holy of Holy and your entire family is going to be there. So it still falls under personal travel. Or it could be you wanting to go to some place that you always wanted to go to and you never were able to do it. You've heard, you know, if the GM's been handing you out, you know, out all kinds of stuff about planets or other things like that, they might say the 10 wonders of this world and list them out. And you might be like, my character should go do that sometime. This is one of those times. And, you know, it could be nothing more than just a cool story to tell the other players. You know, I'm not saying it should be like a hook.
Yeah.
You know, that happens way too often. Every time you do something, the GM hooks another adventure into it, you know.
Yeah, because then after a while, you're going to be like, okay, my character never gets to rest. Every time I go to do something, something else pops up. And you're going to be afraid to want to sit down and relax and do something because, oh, I'm going to go down the street because I want to get a candy bar and I'm going to have to stop a robbery. You know, yeah, it just...
You know, that's one of the problems about playing, like, any superhero game. That happens all the freaking time.
Yeah.
It really does. You literally cannot step outside your door without being swept away into something terrible.
Anything from a cat in a tree to an alien invasion. Yeah.
Sometimes both.
Hey, that, yeah.
Sometimes the cat in the tree is from an alien invasion. So.
Read Flurkin from Captain Marvel.
Right. How much reductionism this can we get? It can get pretty bad, you know. So, but like I said, you know, so traveling, you know, is a good thing to do. And there's a game that's a board game, and I highly recommend it. And I can't think of the name of it right now, but it's a Japanese game, or it's, I think it's a Japanese game, but the whole point of the game is that you go from town to town and you do things to try to give you first pick. And what you do then is you go in and do, like, I go to the hot springs, or I paint a picture, or I have a party with the mayor, or I do something else. Okay. And, you know, and when you get to the end of the whole game, okay, you have this mass of tokens in front of you, and you look down and you say, wow, this was a great vacation. This trip was tremendous. Look at all the stuff I did. And even if you didn't win by the victory points, because someone actually did a little bit more than you did, you still look down and you say, this was a great time. I mean, my character, this character had a great time. I wish I had so much fun on my vacations. So, you know, it's, and I it was kind of eye-opening, because that's all the game is literally you and other people going on a vacation and trying to outdo each other on having a good time.
I can see that in the Japanese mindset, because of, you know, the general work ethic that you hear about Japanese workers. And yeah, they even make having fun a goal-oriented experience.
Yeah, and if your GM will give you, like, experience for having a good time, you know, it might motivate the players to actually have a good time.
Yeah, ooh. Oh, and I'm sure that if you look hard enough in your game mechanics for giving experience, there will be some type of mechanic for doing such a thing as going on a trip, and, you know, where it's, there are goals like, oh, maybe I want to ride this roller coaster, or maybe I want to, you know, take this cruise or whatever. And yeah, they're a good system will have some means. If not, the GM can adjudicate some type of a merit system, like 50 experience points because you got to go to a park and check out this attraction that's world known. Yeah. Just, yeah.
In the original Tritech system, there actually were things, you didn't get experience points for doing these things, but they had rules, like, for example, every year you got older, you gained a free skill point that you could put to anything. And it was supposed to represent what you had been doing, basically, in your off time or even for work. But you were encouraged to, you know, because in that game, you took your primary skill, your secondary skill, one primary skill, two secondary skills, and then you had two hobby skills, you know, that you were, and of course, people tried to min-max that sometimes, but I always discourage them from doing that. I says, no, it's got to be something fun, something that you would do that isn't directly related to, you know, what, you know, you're not just trying to pump up your primary skills here. You're trying to, you know, because, you know, later on they're like, I'm this mom from the suburbs, and I'm now an interdimensional explorer, and I got to throw this grenade. Well, what do I do to throw? Well, he says, well, you have a throw skill. I mean, a throw stat. He says, yeah, is there anything I can do to improve it? I said, do you have a skill that relates to throwing? And they're like, well, I was on, my son's softball team. I have it as a hobby. I says, well, that'll give you some bonuses to do that. So, and I used to say that here's this person with a sword, and they're gonna swing at me with this sword. I says, okay. I come run up to the guy, and I go down and I try to slide past him like I'm trying to get past the first baseman to get to home base. In baseball, so he can't tag me. Therefore, he can't swing. I'm trying to do that. My baseball skills should come into that. And, the GM was like, well, okay, that makes sense. I guess you can do that because they do that. And it's always a good idea to look at your skills and see if you can apply them to situations which are not directly to that. And so that's where your hobbies that may be totally unrelated can come back and be a big help to you.
Yeah, 3035, they got rid of it in Pathfinder, but 3035, they had stuff called skill synergy, where if you had five or more ranks in a skill that applied to the skill you were doing, and the best example would be for gather information, which has now been lumped into diplomacy. If you have five or more ranks, say, in knowledge local, that would give you a +2 that gather information check because you know how to go around and deal with people and in what type of neighborhoods and all that. Yeah, so it would be considered a hobby. It's like, yeah, let's say I have a skill, gang tactics or whatever, and you're there in the hood trying to, get information. Well, if you have the skill and you happen to know about gang tactics, let's say either you were a cop and you learned it, which cops take classes for that, or you spent time in a gang as a kid, that could be counted as a, hobby, with air quotes, and that would give you a little bit of...
Or background.
Yeah, a background check. And it would give you a little bit of boost on, I'm in a back alley here and I want to try to gather information without, getting shot or beat up. Okay, well, I know that not to wear this color in this neighborhood or whatever. Yeah. And so, yeah,
that's really important. That's people forget about that all the time.
Oh yeah. 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 And I, as I said, with Fur having lived, my girlfriend Fur having lived 15 years in, the inner city of Detroit, I've gotten an education on stuff. She's like, don't walk this way or, don't look at that person or, don't, or those times, don't make eye contact. And then I looked at her and said, oh, what? I can't show my teeth on a smile here. It's known as a sign of aggression. She just gave me that look like, like you're getting close there. Yeah. But yeah, skill synergy was something that came up in 3035 that did something like this. If you had some type of background skill, like profession herbalist, you could use that to help you with a survival skill to try to help you get the right herbs, to help you to, feed yourself out in the wilderness. Oh, wait a minute, I'm an herbalist. Yeah, I know that these herbs here, sweet Sicily and all that, it has a bit of an anise taste, and this will be helpful with the meal. Yeah, that type of stuff. Excuse me.
Yeah, or if you're in a cooking contest, if you have backgrounds in herbology, you might be able to pull in some unusual spices that might really wow the judges.
Oh, yeah. It's those little things that your character has that you pick up along the way when you're not out there adventuring that can often make or break a particular encounter. They can really help you just come out of the blue. It's like, wait a minute, I do this. Oh, this applies here. Yeah. Be mindful of the background skills that you earn along the way, that one skill rank here or there, because it can come to help you down the line.
Right. So there's really good reasons to try to develop a new interest. Yeah. And again, not just to bolster your primary things, because you never know when you're going to need something.
Yeah. It's like, let's say you're there with the king and there's a feast, like a brunch, with oh, wait a minute, I used to be a baker before I started swinging a sword. Yeah, maybe I can suggest something to his baker to, you know, help get in good with the king, and he'll notice, oh, that gentleman over there, you know, gave me this secret to help you, your majesty, to help you enjoy your tarts more. Thank you, kind sir. And, you know, you get in good with the king. You don't know.
Well, or you're trying to get to see the king, and you go in and talk to the baker, and you help the baker in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And after you, and you make this nice little tart or whatever like that, and he says, okay, I got to, you know, keep working on this. Here, go take them in into the king. And you get to walk up, and it says, here, your majesty. And he eats this. He says, this is wonderful. He says, well, he says, do I know you? And that's when you have your opportunity to introduce yourself.
You have your foot in the door, folks. Yeah.
Right. And it's all because you decided to be nice to the baker.
Because you happen to know about baking, so you started that.
Or you happen to know something different than the baker, and you're basically enlarging the baker's knowledge and giving yourself an opportunity. Because, like, you know, there's lots of food out there that I didn't even know about until I was in my 20s, okay? I mean, the first Italian food that I really ever had, I was in my 20s. The first pizza I ever had, I was late teens. Because there literally were no pizza places in Pittsburgh up till then. Okay, they had Italian restaurants. I'm not saying they didn't have Italian restaurants, but they didn't have pizza. All right, we had a big Greek community there wasn't a Greek restaurant anywhere nearby. You know, so my uncle took me out to eat grape leaves, which I did not like. And other things like putting meat in pita bread. I was, you know, again, I was like 14 at the time. I'd never had it before.
A hero.
Well, yes, but see, where I grew up, a hero was a sub.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that hero that begins with the G and everybody, what, a gyro? What? Hero, yeah. No, oh no. I still remember when you were last up here, you and I were last together in person for Continuum, and we all went out to Beirut Restaurant. It's a Middle Eastern restaurant near Detroit Metro Airport. And Bruce and Beth were up here for Continuum, a Rich's final memorial. And Bruce was, I saw him. It was just, I'm like, he had a full plate there. It's already half gone. And it's just, holy smokes. It's like he's never eaten Middle Eastern food before. And I think you told me you might have had it once. Yeah, just so he was just scarfing it down, folks. Just wow.
Because there's a lot of different foods, you know, Chinese, believe me, Vietnamese cooking is not the same as Japanese cooking.
No, it is not. I've had Vietnamese food. It's wonderful. Yes.
And I've had, you know, Pacific Islander type food, which is completely different than Hawaiian. Well, not that much different, but pretty much different than Hawaiian food, and certainly different than Mexican or.
Oh, yeah.
French or German. Or and Russian teas when I was in Russia was completely amazing. So I'm just saying is that there's lots of different foods, and that's, you know, and with your character background, you know, you should just say, I know how to cook. I know how to cook this kind of food. You should specify. That way you gain that extra little oomph because someone says, I've never had, you know, food from, the gnome underworlds. What's that like? And you're like, ah, well, let me show you.
A lot of mushrooms and fungus. Yeah. No, there's in the Spheres of Power wiki that Drop Dead Studios does, they have their class, the blacksmith, but they have an archetype called the Iron Chef. And they give you a protein, flavors, insights of like fruits, vegetables, starches. And you can sit there and make a character who is a chef. And the thing is, when you combine these things, you and whoever else eats them gets bonuses. So profession cook, profession chef. If you have a knowledge skill for, say, cuisine, those will be really helpful, too. That's a really good background skill. I sat there, and let's see, I've used it for Jeff's. Yeah, Jeff DeRef made a Death Eater who was also a chef on the side from Harry Potter. and my friend Courtney's.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, I know. No, actually, in the campaign, he said, yeah, it's a magic school, but also it's a culinary school on the side. So you do get a job bag you could fall back on in case the little magic thing falls.
I know, but it sounds terrible to say I'm a Death Eater and I'm a cook. I'm like, what are you cooking for me?
Yeah. But no, there's just this class. It focuses on cooking, and to give Jeff ideas, I went and this amused Fur. Wait a minute, what are you doing on allrecipes.com? Research, Jared's research, Chef's character, the Death Eater chef. Oh my God, really? You don't cook for me, but you'll make up recipes for him. I said, okay, now you're making it sound like I'm mean. But yeah, just having something as simple as knowledge of cooking or baking can be a fascinating new skill that your character can learn on the side. And it can serve in many ways down the line for either just your friends and your fellow, adventuring company, or an NPC down the line who that information might help get a foot in the door. So, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Trev. That's really good. But we don't want to beat this to death, but I think our listeners understand that eating food and meals are central to, life. Yeah. So therefore, it's something that if you develop it, it'll cause friction with the other players, characters, and also with the GM's NPCs, and just overall can make your game experience a lot better. So, yeah. Now, I think it's interesting because in the list I made, I originally had romance on the top, but I moved it down. Because, unless you're like, that is the driving force in your life, it usually you don't have time. That's usually something you really have to work at, but that is one of the things that you get to do because, I don't know about you, Trav, but I have, in my role playing experience, not as a GM, but as a player character, even though it's not that much considering I've been a GM for life, every time that I've tried to have a romance with another player character, it has been not so successful. Okay. And I've been only slightly better successful with the NPCs because the GMs, they unless it directly links to their story, most GMs just really don't want you to do that. So, and I think that's bad GMing, bad GM. But that's something that sometimes you have to plan for, that for your downtime. So if you have a wife, a spouse on the home front and kids, because that happens in real life, even the adventurers who go out, sailors or whatever, they still have somebody at home keeping the home fires going. And when they come back, they generally want, the spouse is like ready for some romance and you should be ready to deliver it, or at least to receive it because they probably have plans as well.
Yeah. Again, it's what you mentioned earlier about your characters are not robots. They still have all of these emotions and whatnot that they want to deal with. And if it's part of the backstory, then use it and just, it's, oh God, The Last Kingdom, like by season 4, a lot of Uhtred's people had wives and, wives and even some kids with them, and that's what they would come back to, and you would see them interacting with the wives, and of course, when danger's there, Uhtred's companions, Finan, Sitric, and Osfert, Sitric and Finan anyways, looks at the wife, said, okay, it's time for me to go to work, get the kids, go hide in the cellar there, and we'll come back for you. And it still adds an element of humanity to your character, knowing that you have these, dependents, I guess. Yes, they are there for your mental well-being, but also, you have to take care of them.
They're supposed to replace you at some point.
Well, back in, like, well, I mean, we we are more open with our things. Oh, a daughter can, you know, pick up the father's sword or the mother's, you know, magic staff. But yeah, your children are supposed to carry on your legacy. That's, you know,
take over the business, you know, inherit the farm. You know, it's.
And the whole romance aspect is good because it makes a more well-rounded character. I'm not saying that every character should have a romantic subplot, but, you know, if you have it, the character tends to realize, okay, yeah, I have to go out and do adventure, but I got to do it smart. I can't just go running into battle anymore, or otherwise I'll be my wife will be seeing me come home getting carried home on my shield. No, I might want to employ some tactics so I make it back home the next time. It'll... At the very least,
yeah, you don't want to spend all your downtime healing rather than spending some romance time with your spouse.
I was going a little darker, you know, coming back, you know, on the shield, you know.
Oh, you mean getting resurrected?
Yeah, here's what's left of your husband here, Brunhilde. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, jeez. But no, if you've had the time to develop some type of romantic subplot in your downtime and possibly start a family, it could help the character be a little more well-rounded. Because again, at the very least in battle, it's like, okay, I can't go into this battle stupidly. You know, my kids need a father. Okay, how am I going to plan this out so I make it back for the kid's birthday? You know, just little things like that. It does. It just makes for a better rounded character. And you do a little more role-playing.
Yeah, and sometimes you say, hey, we should let those younger people go and take the risks this time so we can come home. You know, let them take the risks for once. Yeah. Because I got more to lose than they do.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
And that's not just evil thinking. I mean, that's very practical thinking that people really do in real life. You know, it's like when we're, you know, they're... Let's see here. We're sending people out on a possibly, you know, suicide mission. Well, we're not going to send anybody who's got kids or anybody who's married. All right, send the young, unattached, who are still young enough and stupid enough that we can convince that this is a heroic way to go out. You know. This is very practical things that they do. It's one of the reasons why they go and conscript from the young, because they're easier to convince that this is a really good idea. People are going to sing stories about you, and you really want, did you expect to live forever? You know, and I'm like, well, I thought I'd last past next week.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Or no, it's like, because folks, Bruce and I are at the age where now we can have younger people do stuff for us. You know, it's like,
sometimes we have to.
Like I told, a week from this recording, folks, I'll be turning 55. So it's like, oh no, the younger person can do this, or at least help me. You know.
Sure.
Yeah. Just no. And of course, with you know, Fur, which you've all heard here on the podcast, she's got a 12 and a 10-year-old. I was like, oh no, they are non, we got to put this properly, or otherwise I got to become the disclaimer guy. Non-exploited child labor, we'll put it that way. Say, like, no, Ramses, you can take out the trash. Alexis, you can sweep.
I was exploited child labor. I will say it right up front. My mom looked out into the backyard of our apartment complex, land we did not own, okay? And she said, oh, I think I want to put a 150-foot-long hedge out there, son. You know, and I'm like, I'm not doing that. She says, oh, you're not planning on eating? Okay.
Wow.
Yes, I'm not kidding. She literally told me that if I didn't do it, I had to go out and get myself a job and start paying for my food.
Wow.
So yes, 150-foot long hedge.
See, I didn't want to make it sound like we condone child labor, sweatshops, or anything.
I don't condone it.
I just, but it got a little dark there. Just, yeah.
Yeah, well, what got really dark was like 2 years later when she said, you know, those hedges are too close together. I want you to take out every other one. And I was just think of the fury rising in me. I will never do gardening for you again.
Just again, old woman. Just yeah.
At this point, I had a job, okay, and I was like, fine, don't cook for me anymore. Oh, and you can't use the car either. Damn.
Son of a.
Yeah, because I was a teenager and I wanted that car.
You get that. Forget that one fatal flaw in your plan. Yeah.
The fatal flaw in my plan was always I never had enough money ahead that I could really, you know, wait her out. You know, I know.
Oh man.
there's a reason why high school jobs don't pay very well.
Yeah.
Anyways, okay. So we talked about travel. We talked about developing a new interest. You know, sometimes you need personal time because you literally have to do things that are part of life that doesn't show up very often, like paying your taxes.
What we call it to these days, folks, adulting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Well, there was a story, some people may know about it, where a man had to take his bride, who was pregnant, and travel from the city in which he lived to the city where he was born, so he could be they could do a census on he and his family and his newborn. You know, that place was called Bethlehem.
Ah.
And you might have heard that story. These things happen where, you know, it's part of, as you say, adulting. You know, you might have to go and pay taxes, you know, and you just can't, they're not going to come to you. You either go to them and pay your taxes or they come get you and then it's bad, you know, you might need to appear in a court as a witness on a trial or something. Or you might be having a fight with your neighbor and you need to go and over something that you consider important and you need to go and get it resolved in a court of law. You know, these things happen. You know,
yeah.
If you got a spouse with four youngins, you know, they may not be able to do that. They need somebody else. Either you have to take care of those youngins while your spouse goes and does it, or you go and do it. So sometimes you say you have to do these things, you know, and I'm not sure how much fun that is. It's kind of up to between you and the GM to deal that. But you might say to the GM, hey, you know, I want to go and get this done so that I can do. I can then set things up for something I want to do in the future. So you might have to do it. You might have to say, yes, I need to go and do this. I need to go get my name changed, you know, because I happen to have a name that's basically the same name as the kingdom's greatest traitor. And I don't want to be known as, you know, Sir Benedict.
Yeah, right. It's like, yeah, Benedict Arnold Johnson is not what I signed up for. I need to go and, yeah.
Yeah, it's a perfectly valid, I mean, you know, Hitler, you're a perfectly valid name. Adolf is the same, you know, in Germany for, you know, but nobody wants to be called it here in America. So if you happen to come over, you know, it was in World War II, there were a lot of people that came over from other countries and all of a sudden found out that they had names that were not, you know, either they were bad names in the sense, or they were funny sounding names, and they needed to get their names officially changed to something more that will help them in their life.
You know, like Seymour Butts or Rusty Pipes or, yeah.
Anything like that, yeah, you know, because, or you might literally want to get it changed because you want people to think that you're related to somebody important and do that. You know, these are things that you do to set things up to make things better for yourselves. And so that's one reason people go to court, is to get their names changed. And you have to do it. It's a legal process because they have records and they're going to come looking for you at some point about something. It's important that when you say, hey, I'm, you know, you're so-and-so. No, I'm not. I had my name changed, you know, and oh, then, okay, now we can find you, or now you know, we can give you what you, because it was recorded under your other name, not this name. So inheritances are like that. You know, somebody dies and leaves $1 million, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's my second cousin once removed. But your name is nothing like that. Yeah, well, I had it changed. Well, you get to prove that. And this is, I have the name change documents right here, which I happen to have because I had my first and middle name changed, flipped. I was born Richard Bruce, and I changed it to Bruce Richard because I viewed Bruce my entire life. It was ridiculous. So, yeah, I had a name change. And every time I go in for something like a visa, they say, have you ever used another name during your life? And I have to put down my original name. So, yeah, it's more common for women because of the name change.
Well, obviously, marriage and it's...
Yeah, what's your maiden name, things like that. It's much more common.
Yeah, well, my kid, after her divorce, ended up taking the mother's maiden name. Yeah, so they had to go back, went to Montgomery, yeah.
I was listening to NPR once, and they had this woman on it who was from India, and she said that she had gone through at least a dozen name changes, because what she would do is that she originally left her first marriage because her spouse was abusive. And so she goes over and she goes to another town. She starts living with this other family and she takes their name. And so now she has all kinds of records now under that name. And then she goes to another town and does the same thing again. It's not in a case where you're trying to flee, trying to break the trail. She's trying to find what she wants people to see that she's part of this household. And so she takes the household name as her name. And all of a sudden, she then wants to come to America. And they're like, okay, well, we need to establish who you are. And she's like, well, I've had 12 different names. And they're like, I'm not sure you can come in.
Yeah, because they kind of wonder, okay, what are you escaping from? Well, see, back in the day, you know, in the days of Ellis Island, you could do that.
Yeah.
My great-grandfather came from Poland, and I will admit this freely, my great-grandfather was, well, on a good day, a bit of a rogue. And so his original last name was Stivic, as in, you know, Rob Reiner's character in All in the Family.
Huh.
And so he changed it to Bostek, B-O-S-T-E-K. And so, yeah, I didn't find out until years later. The Bostek family, yeah. John Sr. and, you know, married four kids. One of them was my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And, no, Stivic, okay. And I'm like, why? And my mom's looking at me and going, you're Judge who died when I was like 3. Yeah, he was a bit of a criminal in Poland. He did it to get away. And, you know, back in the 1800s, they didn't have internet or all that, and Interpol and all that. And he could just change the name and totally disappear and be off of Poland's radar entirely. I'm like, wow.
But this is also why royalty a lot of times would have like 12 names, one after another, basically showing the lineage of how they went, you know, and who they were all affiliated with. So, you know, but usually under most normal circumstances, you say, this is my first name, and you take the last name on the list and says, that's my name now, you know, and that's, but I'm just saying you might need to take some time to establish things like that, you know, and sometimes you do it because you want to be found. You know, you come to a country, you know, you're living out in the sticks. Somebody may come, some family member might come looking for you. They don't know where you are, but you leave those records at the town hall. They come to the town hall. They say, does anybody know somebody by the name of X? And they says, oh, yeah, it's right here. But, you know, they're going by this name and they live over there. And then you can find your way to them. So it's, you know, I mean, family Bibles are great, you know, about recording that sort of thing. But you have to, you know, if it's with your family, other people may not learn about it, which is why church baptismal records and registries and confirmations and weddings, things that were kept in churches sometimes became the hall of records for an entire community.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're trying to avoid things, yeah, then yeah, change your name. Sure, sure. Okay. So I'm just saying there are good reasons to role play this sort of thing, you know, and it can be fun. But you know, even if you don't like go through the blow by blow of this sort of thing, just saying that you're doing it during your downtime can deal out benefits later on.
This is Bruce Sheffer saying there are a million worlds out there, so go explore them.
And this is Trav. There's a reason why it's called gaming. It's for having fun.
Gaming on the Frontier podcast is wholly owned by its hosts. It is released under the Creative Commons 3.0 license. No commercial reproduction and any use of any element of the podcast must be attributed to the Gaming on the Frontier podcast.
Hi, this is Trav from the Travcast. Listen to me Tuesday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on listen.dementiaradio.org/8027.